Hi, everybody. Thanks for coming out to early morning talk. Brief, I guess, prefatory word about the book, about Martha Russell. For me, Martha's writings were incredibly important for my own understanding of disability. I got interested in the topic for two main reasons. One was a number of years ago I stumbled upon some articles by Helen Keller writing about socialism and disability, and was just struck by how insightful and prescient it was. And sort of getting further into that world, finding Martha Russell's work, at the same time thinking about my own, almost lifelong struggle with mental illness and depression, anxiety. These things really helped me to think more clearly, more constructively about myself, about the world. So I just wanted to start with that, by my own personal note of how important Martha's writings are to me. In terms of the nature of this talk, I also want to sort of preface this by saying that there are many aspects of disability and many ways that different people talk about it. On one hand, there can be a sort of clinical or medical or technical approach. There can be a cultural or anthropological approach. There can also be a deeply personal aspect in which an individual's disability is wrapped up in the unique experience of their identity. And that's also a common form of disability. Literature is a sort of memoir or self-narrative or autobiography. There are some really excellent ones out there, some that are in the room, the book room. This talk, however, is based upon a different aspect than that. It is a political, economic, and historical analysis of disability. In particular, this talk is about the modern understanding and definition of disability, which emerged alongside the modern system of capitalism itself. Can everyone, am I talking into the microphone? I just want to make sure everyone's good. And,
good.
Okay. Although a vast spectrum of physical and mental attributes, abilities, and impairments have always been an indelible part of the human species, the specific creation of a legal, political, and economic category or subgroup of humans collectively referred to as disabled is a relatively recent phenomenon. Now, Karl Marx, of course, is recognized for his preeminent examination of the nature and origins of the capitalist phase of human history. And since the phenomenon of disablement arises with capitalism, it should come as no surprise that there is much in Marx's analysis of capitalism that is indispensable to the elaboration of a complete understanding of disability. There are very few people who are directly engaged in the development of such an understanding. And Martha Russell is certainly the most important and groundbreaking of those. Russell was by no means the first to explore the connection between capitalism and disability, or the notion that disability itself is a form of oppression conditioned by the historical and material circumstances of society. Rather, I would argue that her genius resides in the scope and depth with which she excavated these phenomena. In particular, Russell went further than anyone else in specifically rooting disability oppression under capitalism in explicitly Marxist terms. For Russell, the oppression of disabled people in the modern capitalist world is no mere historical accident or tangential symptom of the dominant social system. Rather, capitalism and disability are structurally, necessarily, and ontogenetically linked in a dialectical process of mutual reinforcement. So before getting into the theoretical essence of Russell's thinking, I just want to give a brief biographical description so people have a picture of who we're talking about. Marta Russell was born in 1951 and died just a few years ago in 2013. She grew up in Mississippi and as a young adult was involved in the 1960s civil rights movement against racial segregation. Though Russell had been born with various mobility impairments, she did not yet think of disability in political terms during this period of her life. Indeed, it wasn't until many years later that such thoughts crossed her mind. Russell moved to Los Angeles in the mid-1970s, where she began a career working in the film industry and shortly thereafter raising a daughter. In the late 1980s, Russell developed further mobility impairments and she began using a wheelchair. Before long, she found it increasingly prohibitive to continue working in the industry and eventually came to rely on Social Security Disability Insurance, or SSDI, payments as a means of supporting herself and her child. Slowly, Russell began meeting more disabled people, and in particular, more disabled activists, who introduced her to the notion of disability as a political concept. She became involved with disability activist organizations such as ADAPT and Not Dead Yet. Simultaneously, Russell developed her political ideology at a very rapid pace. She engaged in extensive studies of the works of Noam Chomsky, Howard Zinn, Francis Moore LePay, Angela Davis, Karl Marx, and a plethora of others. In 1998, she published her first and only book titled Beyond Ramps, which is an excellent book, and she spent the next 10 years or so after further developing, refining, and reformulating her arguments on the nature of disability oppression under capitalism. Let's see, I wanted to start the main piece of this talk by just going over some statistics that give a sense of the conditions of disabled people in the U.S. today. So there are about 64 million disabled people in the U.S., or 20% of the population. Roughly half that number are those who are defined as having a severe disability. For women, the percentage is 25% have a disability. For black people, it is 30%. For LGBT people, around 36%. 35% of all disabled people acquire their disabling condition from a work-related injury or illness. The percentage of disabled people living below the poverty line is 28%. 40% of all homeless people are disabled. And the unemployment rate of disabled people is 73%, which comprises those who are actively looking for work and those who report that they would prefer to work if they could. Finally, in terms of crime and policing, disabled individuals are twice as likely as non-disabled individuals to be the victim of violence and three times as likely to be the target of sexual assault. 40% of women with disabilities experience domestic or spousal abuse and violence, which is much higher than the already high rate of 25% of all women. 50% of all people killed by the police annually in the U.S. have a disability, half of whom have a mental disability or illness. And of all those currently incarcerated in state prisons across the U.S., 73% of women and 55% of men suffer from some form of mental illness. So clearly that, I think, paints a pretty dire picture. But just as in the realm of painting, a lot depends upon how one interprets what is being depicted. And the prevailing interpretation in our society and for most of the society's history is not one that identifies all this as a form of systematized oppression resulting from the dominant mode of production. For most of history, the ruling ideas have been quite different. These ideas, the sort of prevailing notions, hold that the inferior, even pitiable, condition of disabled people is simply a function of their individual misfortune, a quote-unquote natural disaster, so to speak. At best, this might mean that the disabled person is deserving of charity, since they can't be blamed for having been dealt a bad hand in life. At worst, it could mean the disabled person has no claim to a better life, because it is in the natural order of things that the fittest among us rise to the top at the expense of the weak. What both these positions share is an assumption that the original source of the inferior living conditions is located in the individual's physiology rather than in the surrounding social system. I think you can see similarity in the way that liberal and even conservative wings of official capitalist ideology talk about many of the different ills of the system. You know, if someone is poor, it's either because of some unfortunate accident which has befallen them individually, and you know, they should perhaps be offered a hand up, or alternatively, it's because of some flaw in their individual character, and they need to be taught discipline and the value of hard work and perseverance. In the realm of disability, this has meant that a lot of the historical focus has been of a purely rehabilitative or philanthropic variety. The idea is that if medicine or technology could simply help the blind to see, the deaf to hear, the depressed person to think happy thoughts, then the problem would go away. Or perhaps if the disabled had access to charitable funds, they would be able to more effectively compete in the market of modern life. Now, I do want to state clearly that I do think that we as socialists should absolutely support everything and anything which in any way makes life better and more livable for all human beings, including medical breakthroughs, technological and prosthetic advancements, pharmaceuticals which provide relief, financial assistance which enables the purchase of necessary commodities, etc. I think we should support all of this and more being made as widely accessible as possible in this society to those who want and need them. The problem, simply, is that as long as the basic relations, inequalities, and economic imperatives of capitalism remain intact, disabled people will continue to exist as an oppressed subgroup. I'll quote Helen Keller, who I mentioned earlier, socialist disability advocate, who I think described it quite well in an article she wrote for a magazine for the blind 100 years ago. She writes, "We have been accustomed to regard the unemployed, deaf, and blind as victims of their infirmities. That is to say, we have supposed that if their sight and hearing were miraculously restored, they would find work. But I wish to suggest that the unemployment of the blind is only part of a greater problem. There are, it is estimated, 1 million laborers out of work in the United States. Their inaction is not due to physical defects or lack of ability or intelligence or to ill health or vice. It is due to the fact that our present system of production necessitates a large margin of idle people. The business world in which we live cannot give everyone an opportunity to fulfill their capabilities or even assure a continuous occupation as an unskilled laborer. The means of employment, the land, the factories, that is, the tools of labor, are in the hands of a minority of people and are used to increase owners' profits rather than keeping all busy and productive. Thus it has come to pass that in this land of plenty, there is an increasing number of quote-unquote superfluous men. In a small corner of this vast social distress, we find our unemployed blind. Their lack of sight is not the primary cause of their idleness. It is a contributing cause. It relegates them to the enormous army of the unwillingly idle. I think that quote from Helen Keller is also helpful in illuminating the presence of an historical tradition of socialists who have put forth a counter-analysis to that of the ruling reformist rehabilitative position. In the 1930s, this was expressed by the formation of a group of socialist disabled activists called the League of the Physically Handicapped, which is a great history that's worth exploring further. Later in the 1970s and 80s, disabled socialists in England organized around a theory of disability that would come to be referred to as the social model of disability. The social model represented the clearest attempt yet to place disablement in an historical and materialist context. It affirmed the notion that the oppression of disabled people was a function of the external social environment rather than any inherent shortcomings of the disabled individual themselves. Michael Oliver, who coined the phrase social model of disability, writes in the book he wrote, The Politics of Disablement, quote, "The ideological construction of the individual was rooted in history. Marx wrote that the further back we go into history, the more the individual, and therefore the producing individual, seems to depend on and constitute a part of the larger whole. At first, it is quite naturally the family and the clan, which is but an enlarged family. Later on, it is the community. Hence, individuals always existed, but only as part of larger social groupings, whether they be families, clans, or communities. It was only with the rise of the Industrial Revolution that the isolated, private individual appeared on the historical stage. The idea of disability as an individual pathology only becomes possible when we have an idea of individual able-bodiedness. The contemporary concept of disability is clearly linked to the rise of industrial capitalism and the development of wage labor requiring a specific kind of individual, namely, one able to operate dangerous machinery in competition with their peers. Prior to this, individuals, whether with impairments or otherwise, had worked cooperatively within the family, the community, and the clan. Although ignorance and prejudice were not uncommon, and differences in individual contributions noted and often sanctions applied, individuals were rarely segregated from everyday life as a result of difference in performance. So the social model of disability, I think, is clearly an inherently progressive, even radical thesis. But I don't think it's quite, I wouldn't characterize it as exactly Marxist theory, per se. It certainly leans on a number of Marxist concepts, but as used by both its originators and its proponents, it is intentionally a somewhat broad, eclectic, and more ambiguous framework. It is meant to be utilized by those with a variety of political ideologies. And what it therefore possesses in breadth, it lacks to a certain degree in depth and precision, in my opinion. So this then brings us to the theoretical contribution of Mark and Russell. So I'll give a summation of what I think are four key components of her argument, and then I'll explain those further. So the first one is that the prevailing rate of the exploitation of labor determines who is disabled and who is not. Second, that those whose labor falls far enough below the mean in its productive capacity are considered unemployable and are removed from the active army of workers via market marginalization, physical segregation, or state pauperization. basically means impoverishment. Three, that this mass of humans comprises the so-called surplus population, whose existence in perpetual isolation, poverty, and degradation serve as a discipline and a warning to the active working class regarding the necessity of their quote-unquote voluntary participation in the system of wage labor. And finally, point four, that the classical liberal civil rights approach to social change actually falls far short of what is needed in the case of disability liberation. In particular, the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990, while an important reform, has barely had any impact on vital economic metrics such as unemployment, poverty, and homeless rates for disabled people. This is because any approach which fails to address the actual class relations of society itself will also fail to have any significant impact on the oppressive conditions resulting from those class relations. So to begin to unpack all of that, I hope it's okay with you all, but I have a somewhat extended passage of writing from Russell that I think expands upon this very well, so I'm just going to read that. She writes, "Under Marx's labor theory of value, the basis of capitalist accumulation is surplus labor value. The worker's ability to work, Marx calls this labor power, is sold to the capitalist in return for a wage. The amount of labor time that the worker works to produce value equivalent to their wage, Marx calls necessary labor. The additional labor time that the worker works beyond this, Marx calls surplus labor. And the value it produces, he calls surplus value. The capitalist appropriates the surplus value as a source of profits. Non-disabled workers have value because bosses can push them to produce at ever increasing rates of speed and generate higher profits. As capitalism developed, impaired persons, whether they be deaf, blind, mentally impaired, or those with mobility difficulties, were seen as less fit to do the tasks required of factory workers. Industrial capitalism thus created both a class of proletarians and a class of disabled who did not conform to the standard worker body and whose labor power was effectively ignored. A market-driven society meant that disabled persons, perceived to be of less use to the competitive profit cycle, were excluded from work. As a result, disabled persons came to be regarded as a social problem, and the justification emerged for segregating individuals with impairments from mainstream life and into a variety of institutions, including workhouses, asylums, prisons, colonies, and special schools. Regulating the composition of the labor force through social policy became key to ensuring an ongoing exploitable labor supply. Disability became an important boundary category through which persons were allocated to either the work-based or needs-based system of distribution that obtains under capitalism. In the United States, disability came to be defined explicitly in relation to the labor market. For instance, in many workers' compensation statutes, a laborer's body is rated by impairment according to its functioning parts. In Social Security law, disabled is literally defined as one who is medically unable to engage in work, or quote-unquote substantial gainful activity. Social analysts describe the needs-based system as a privilege because as an administrative category, it carries with it permission to be exempt from the work-based system. In conservative terms, disability can be described as an essential part of the moral economy. In the public debate over redistribution of societal resources, public assistance is viewed as legitimate for those deemed unable to work, but the disabled individuals on public benefits under U.S. capitalism do not have any objective right to a decent standard of living, even with so-called privileged status. Nor is the definition of disability etched in stone. Rather, the definition of disability is flexible. The state, which evaluates disability status, controls the labor supply by expanding or contracting the number of persons who qualify as disabled, often for political and economic reasons. I think it's the last point there is noteworthy for demonstrating how disability itself can be a politically and socially constructed category. Throughout the history of the US, numerous impairments or conditions have been variously included and excluded from the rubric of disability for political, economic, historical, geopolitical reasons. And there's countless examples throughout US history of this being done. In the 1970s and 80s, Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan drastically cut the number of people receiving disability benefits by redefining what disability was. And they explicitly did so as responses to economic recession. In the 1990s, Bill Clinton similarly sought to move workers from the disability rolls into the active workforce in order to keep inflation and wage growth down as a means of extending the economic boom. As Martha Russell points out, all of this can best be understood in terms of Marx's general law of capitalist accumulation. Marx identified an economic paradox of capitalism in that as its productive powers developed, a diminishing number of workers would be able to set in motion a greater mass of productive output, even as the absolute number of human laborers increased with the general social wealth. This led to a constant, if not expansive, proportion of humanity being rendered, quote unquote, superfluous or perpetually unemployed, what Marx called the industrial reserve army of labor. The ability for the capitalist class to effectively control this reserve army via expansion or contraction thus became an important tool in its ability to control the economy and, by extension, society as a whole. Marx explicitly argues that the reserve army, or the relative surplus population, includes disabled people. He writes, "This class of perpetually marginalized individuals includes the demoralized and ragged, those unable to work, chiefly people who succumb to their incapacity for adaptation to capitalism due to the division of labor, people who have passed the normal age of the laborer, the victims of industry whose number increase with the increase of dangerous machinery, of mines, chemical works, the mutilated, the ill, etc. Pauperism is the hospital of the active labor army and the dead weight of the industrial reserve army. Its production is included in that of the relative surplus population, its necessity in theirs. Along with the surplus population, pauperism forms a condition of capitalist production and of the capitalist development of wealth. It enters into the collateral operating costs of capitalist production. But capital knows how to throw these, for the most part, from its own shoulders onto those of the working class and the lower middle class." And I think this last sentence is also borne out starkly in the US, where working class people proportionately contribute far more financially to federal Social Security fund than the wealthy or corporations, and where working class people end up engaging in sort of caring or social reproductive labor, usually without pay, to family or friends themselves. Finally, Marx points out that this surplus population constitutes a group, quote, "whose misery is an inverse ratio to its torment of labor." Or, as Martha Russell puts it, capitalism is a system that forces non-disabled persons into the labor market, but just as forcefully coerces many disabled persons out. Oppression occurs in either case. And I think that this is an important point to consider when thinking about the ways in which disability oppression or disablement under capitalism is injurious not just to disabled people, but also to the non-disabled members of the working class. Within the capitalist form of alienated wage labor, human individuality and unique potentiality, as manifested in the uneven and differing capabilities which exist amongst all humans, that all gets flattened out and negated for the majority of workers. While hyper-exaggerating the differences that obtain between those considered disabled and able-bodied, capitalism simultaneously distorts the differences that obtain within each of these two bifurcated groups. As Marx writes, capitalism takes all the natural, spiritual, and social variety of individual activity out of spontaneous human labor and instead renders the worker ever more exclusively dependent on a particular, very one-sided, machine-like labor. The worker is thus depressed spiritually and physically to the condition of a machine, and from being a human becomes an abstract activity and a belly. The content of the labor activity of those inside the active workforce is treated like a more or less standardized and therefore easily replaceable resource. Individual humans are rendered abstract laborers who together comprise an undifferentiated mass of potential profit for the owners of capital to exploit. These human resources are expected to conform to a homogeneous pace and process of alienated production, regardless of the disparate effects this wear and tear has on their disparate minds and bodies. At the same time, all those outside of the active labor force, owing to a given impairment, are likewise categorized as an undifferentiated disabled mass. This categorization, of course, tells us absolutely nothing about the unique qualities of the disabled individual, other than that they are deemed unequipped for the particular form of wage labor that obtains under modern capitalism. Thus, the socially constructed separation of humans into fixed and exclusive disabled and non-disabled categories are merely two sides of the exact same coin. Both are inextricable functions of the capitalist mode of production. In this regard, disability, or more precisely, disablement, is in the same economic category as unemployment, poverty, or inequality. It constitutes that which capitalism cannot do without. It is clear to me, and hopefully to others then, that the only way out of this mutually repressive state of affairs is through a radical restructuring of the nature of production and distribution, and indeed a transformation in the conceptual nature of value itself. The production process should be democratically adapted to the human laborers, rather than forcing the human laborers to adapt to the production process. Distribution should be consciously mediated by human need, rather than by a consumer market premised upon the unconscious reproduction of existing inequalities. And humans should be valued according to their unique creativity, imagination, strengths, desires, and loves, rather than simply being a measure of the number of commodities an individual can produce at a profit for their employer to sell on the market in a given number of hours. As Martha Russell writes, in our society, humane concerns are subsumed by the market's tyranny, the inversion or camera obscura of what is needed to foster an inclusive, cooperative, and healthy society. Questions that need to be brought to the forefront might include the following. What is the purpose of an economy? To support market-driven profits, or to sustain social bonds and encourage human participation? Is it acceptable to reduce the productive activities of persons to commodity wage labor? Is it defensible to hold in contempt bodies that do not produce the way the capitalist class demands, leaving disabled persons to struggle on low wages or meager benefit checks or to be institutionalized? How can the realm of work be reorganized to provide accommodations for all? And how can all members of society be embraced and rewarded, whether they work or not? In the end, the liberation of all of us depends upon the creation of a society organized around a single adage coined by Marx and often repeated by Martha Russell, from each according to their ability, to each according to their need. Thank you.